What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's mostly minded on managerial matters this week. Coming up, we hear from Portsmouth boss John Mousinho. There are new gaffers galore as Johnson puts the Lee in Fleetwood. The Addicts pick in Appleton. And Adkins says walking into the Tranmere job is brilliant. We'll look ahead to the weekend's big games powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And we are here slightly later than normal, listener. What we thought we'd do is have more of a preview style show this week, given that there wasn't much football to talk about last weekend. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by the former Swindon striker, Sam Parkin. How are you doing, Sam?
Morning, Matthew. Doing really well, mate. Good to see you.
Yes, likewise. Adrian Clark's back with us too, once of Arsenal and Stevenage and Southend and many more beside. How are you doing, Clarky?
Yeah, good morning, Matt. Good morning, Sam. We start again. Make the most of the day, everybody.
Hashtag smile. That's going to be one of the new managers that we're talking about shortly. We're going to hear from John Mousinho as well on everything from Pompey's great start to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. But first, how about this? The guys at Quinbet, our sponsors, have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, let's get into some news, shall we? It's an international break. You know what that means? Managers are coming and going. Let's run through some hires and fires. I want to start with Michael Appleton in at Charlton. The former Oxford, Lincoln and Moore boss has inked a two-year deal. He becomes Charlton's fifth different boss in 2.5 years. The Addicts 16th in the table, 6 points off the playoffs, 4 points above the relegation zone after 6 games in charge. His first match will be at Stevenage on Saturday. Sam, manager and club, both need this to go well, I think. So maybe that will motivate both parties. That's me clutching at some straws. Charlton are a mess. Is Michael Appleton the man to sort them out?
Yeah, I think despite whatever kind of state the club's in or has been in, I think people are still going to want to go there and manage it because of the potential. The support is really good. Great stadium. And they've got a decent enough squad, haven't they, I think, to sort themselves out and potentially have a push this season. So I can see why managers wanted to take it. I've really liked Michael Appleton previously. I would agree with that, Matt, definitely. I think this has to go well for him, considering the last two jobs. Obviously, he had that playoff final season with Lincoln, that brilliant work with some fantastic young players. That was an attractive team to watch, and I thought he did an excellent job there initially. Tailed off, then Blackpool was a bit of a disaster. Well, he didn't really get off to the best start because of his history with Preston and what happened previously when he had that gig. So yeah, the last two jobs have not gone well. He has got the track record of working really successfully with younger players, loan players, which Charlton have a great deal of. So I think it's a decent enough appointment, but yeah, given the last couple of jobs, he needs it to go well. But yeah, I think Lee Burn's returning soon. It's still a good squad. Maybe they're short to go and push for automatics this season, but it's a good enough squad to be around the playoffs. So if he's left to get on with his gig, we shall see.
League One's where he's done his best work, really, Adrian, isn't it? It's just as we say, you know, this one has to go well for him, you would think. And that's going to be tricky at a club that, if one thing that it's lacking severely is stability. Do you think that, as Sam says, he's got the squad to get them contending? And is playoffs kind of the minimum requirement then?
No, I think playoffs is what their target should be, given their squad. And I think they are good enough to do it. They score a lot of goals. They create plenty of chances, Charlton. It's just shoring things up at the back and being less of a soft touch, really. He talked shortly after being appointed about set pieces, which I think are really important, obviously, at any level, but especially League One and League Two. They've got a terrible record from scoring them. Don't, you know, barely score any. And they've been very weak defending them so far this season. So that's a simple one to work on. Be a bit more aggressive, be a bit more organised. And yeah, in general, I think they need to limit the chances they're giving to opposition teams. But I do think they've got a good squad. I do think he's a good manager. He will try and instill this winning mentality. I just worry about the people that are working around him. You know, a few have football backgrounds, but, you know, see themselves as businessmen these days. It doesn't feel quite right at Charlton. But if as Sam says, he's left to get on with the job of managing the team, I think he can do all right. I was looking at his background a little bit, and I am a fan of Michael Appleton's, but his two best jobs were at Oxford, weren't they? Well, Oxford was where he was at his best. He took over from Gary Woddick, who'd had a brief but terrible spell there. The manager previously was Chris Wilder, who'd done phenomenally well, and his win ratio was close to 50%. So he inherited a pretty good Oxford team, and he continued it. And then you look at Lincoln, he inherited the team from Danny Cowley, who, again, I think their win percentage under him was 54%. So again, he inherited his two best success stories came off the back of good previous managers where the team had been flying. So this is going to be a challenge for him because Charlton haven't been flying for quite some time now.
Yeah, he had Brennan Johnson, didn't he, at Lincoln as well, which helped him tremendously in that season. Speaking of Johnsons, another League One side under new management of Fleetwood Town. They've replaced Scott Brown with Lee Johnson, who was available after being future endeavoured by Hibs. He's only 42. He's already managed more than 500 games. Interestingly, Fleetwood haven't disclosed the length of the contract. Their CEO, Steve Kerwood, said, "We're delighted to attract someone with the calibre and record of Lee Johnson. We see it as a real statement of intent." Clarky, a bit of a come down for him, isn't it? It was only last year he was at Sunderland.
Yeah, he's at Bristol City, Sunderland, Hibs. Now he's at Fleetwood, but that's where he finds himself. He likes to stay in work, doesn't he, Lee? He is a bit David Brent, isn't he, in the way that he speaks. He's very, he's just that way inclined. But I do like him. I do like his style of football. I think when he got Bristol City playing and when he got Sunderland playing, they weren't bad to watch. And he, you know, we know about his hot streaks. So they'll be hoping for one of those, won't they, at Fleetwood. He was only out of work for 14 days after getting biffed off by Hibs. Good move, I think, on his part to employ his old mate, Darren Way. I played against both of them when they were at Yeovil as players. And Darren is a former Yeovil manager as well. He's been working down at Plymouth, I think, the academy. And yeah, so he's brought him in. So it's sort of getting the band back together a little bit. And yeah, I do wish him well. One interesting thing about Lee Johnson, because I was looking at his record as well, is that he's always won more games than he's lost at every single club that he's managed, apart from Hibs, where it was a pretty close call. There wasn't much in it. So, you know, he wins a lot of games, Lee Johnson. It's just that he is partial to going on the odd streak where there's no wins in 10 or 12 or 15. And that sometimes does for him. But yeah, I think he can get something out of the Fleetwood squad. But yeah, I don't think he's going to have much to play with in the transfer market. He's already talking about improving the academy and making that pathway clearer for the younger players.
5 defeats in a row for Fleetwood in the league. Sam, I mentioned they didn't disclose the length of the contract. I wonder maybe, therefore, if Johnson said, look, I'll take it till the end of the season and then we'll see where we are then, because he will see his future with the greatest of respect, but higher up the pyramid than the team who are currently second bottom in League One, won't he?
Yeah, I would think so. But it's a bit of rebuilding going on here as well after, you know, what happened at Hibs, especially latterly. I mean, they lost in Andorra a few weeks ago. So it's been a pretty wretched start to the season. I think 3 straight defeats to kick off the SPL season as well. And he's left there with, certainly north of the border, his reputation a little bit in tatters. So there's a bit of a rebuild to do there. But yeah, I agree with Clarkey to an extent. It's a job that he should be comfortable in. He should be able to get them playing decent football. Again, the squad's pretty good there. They've produced a lot of young players over the last few years, as he alluded to. That's an area that they can keep focusing on. And also, they've got some good senior players there, like Stockley and Marriott and Vella could go on. So there's been a difficult start to the season there. And this is a different profile of manager, if you think of the last 3, Barton, Craney, And then Scott Brown. So this is someone a lot more experienced. As you said, he's just passed 500 games. He's been there and done it. But yeah, I wouldn't imagine that he sees this. Despite what he said, I wouldn't probably see him being there in 3 years. I think if he does a good job, there'll be someone maybe higher up the food chain that takes a gamble on him again.
All right. Well, as Adrian said, good morning. Start again. Hashtag make the most of the day. Hashtag smile. Not sure Ian Dawes will be taking Nigel Adkins' advice. He's been sacked by Tranmere. Comes after a run of 6 successive defeats. Adkins, who was working upstairs as technical director, has taken charge on an interim basis. It's interesting, this, Adrian. I don't want to, start rumours or whatever, but is this what Nigel Adkins was hoping for in the first place? Like, it feels quite Kenny Dalglish at Liverpool, there's nobody suited to this job better than me kind of vibes.
Yeah. I suppose we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. He was brought in as a mentor and advisor, wasn't he, to Ian Dawes? You could argue that his mentoring and his advice hasn't been the best, couldn't you, given that Dawes won 3 of 19 matches as Tranmere Rovers head coach. So, yeah, it hasn't worked. It does make sense. It's a convenient option, isn't it, for the club to turn to him. And, you know, as much as we might take the mickey out of Nigel Adkins and his sort of motivational guru-ness, he is a solid enough manager. He's never really been a disaster anywhere. Did very well at Scunthorpe, did very well at Southampton, and even in the jobs that have happened since, it's never been a car crash. It's just faded a little bit after bright starts. So I think he's a relatively safe pair of hands. Loves the club. He is a Tranmere fan. Used to play for them. So yeah, give it a go. He's obviously going to put his arm around those players. He's going to motivate them. He's going to make them feel 10 feet tall. But the bottom line is the squad good enough? And I have to say, looking at it compared to previous Tranmere Rovers squads since the pandemic, say when they were relegated, I think this is the weakest Tranmere squad that we've seen. I don't fancy them for promotion this season.
Yeah, hard to hashtag smile when you're on a 6-game losing streak, Sam. Is this a short-term fix, do you think? Will he be leading the charge for his replacement? Or is he going to kind of give it 5-6 games, see how you do? Because I guess from his point of view as well, you don't want to put your position at the club as technical director or whatever it is in jeopardy by, you know, coming in for 6 games and then losing it. And then the owners say, maybe we shouldn't be letting you advise the new manager and be their mentor.
I could see him sticking around, I reckon. I've seen a shot of him already with his socks pulled up yesterday on the training ground. I reckon he's game. I sat next to him, didn't I, at Craven Cottage last season. And I got the inkling that maybe there was maybe a managerial post still in the offing for him. So I think there's a little bit more experience to come back into that squad, players that are missing. There is quite a few young lads. I'm going to say young lads. There's kind of 18, 19-year-old playing regular football at Tranmere at the moment. So I think they've maybe tried to change tact. I saw the comments from Mark Pallias about the nice brand of football that's been played, but maybe it's just been a little bit naive. I think there's been a bit of a sea change. If you remember a few years ago, it was a lot of experience, wasn't it? Vaughan and who else did they have? Woolery and Peter Clark and things like Jay Spearing, didn't they, for that period when I think they lose in the playoffs? They certainly went close 1 year, so I think there's been a little bit of a change there in culture, and it's maybe just not quite worked. I had a little look yesterday, didn't go into too much detail, but second highest XG against, and in the last 2 games, they've had 50 shots against Wrexham and Colchester. Not loads on their goal, not loads on target, but 50 shots in 2 games the opposition have had. So I think they're a little bit of a soft touch defensively. Although that 2-0 at Colchester was the first time they've lost by multiple goals. So they've been in a lot of games, just a lot of narrow defeats so far. So I'm sure Nigel Adkins will go in. Predominantly, most managers will say, let's stop shipping goals, let's stop conceding chances. And then you've got an opportunity to pick up some points. And I'm sure that's what the focus will be yesterday morning and this morning when he's fresh onto the training ground.
Yeah, he's gonna rattle off that line. He's going to say, we start again, isn't he? He's going to say it to the boys. I mean, it's quite apt in a sense with him taking over. So, yeah, it works.
All right, we'll see how he gets on. Let's maintain the managerial mood by hearing from one who started the season rather well. Pompey gaffer John Mousinho joins us next. Oh, well, John, you must not have wanted the break given the start you've made to the season. How do you spend your weekend off? And would you like to see all League One games postponed across the board? There's only a couple this weekend, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. We never used to have this many games in League One called off. And I think obviously there's a few more international call-ups. It was an interesting one for us because we, in some ways, we didn't want the game called off, I think, with the fact that we beat Peterborough at the weekend. But we'd also had 9 games in the first 30 days of the season. It was probably the busiest August I've ever experienced as a player or a coach. And so it came at quite a good time for us. I think we were in need of a bit of time off just to have a bit of time to not be preparing for games. We gave the lads 4 days off and then we were back in over the weekend. So we were back in Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Had yesterday off and then moving back in this morning on a normal schedule. So I think it actually worked out fairly well for us in the end, just because of the volume of games that we had. We got through in the first round of the League Cup, which just added an extra game into the calendar in August. But yeah, it's also been nice because of those Saturday, Tuesday games to get some training in this week. And that's one thing we haven't been able to do. Every session seems to be a sort of match day minus one. So yeah, it has been nice this week to just get the lads without the pressure of a game and be, I suppose, normal.
Unbeaten in the league so far then, haven't lost in 90 yet this season. Is that down to a good pre-season? Is it the signings that you've made, or is it just brilliant coaching from you and your team?
I think there's a couple of things there. The sort of being unbeaten at the moment is great. We would like to have converted a couple of those draws into wins. I think particularly a couple of those home games where we felt we could have got a bit more out of it. And often, well, it depends, how you're doing. We've sort of been unbeaten for a while now, but we just haven't won enough of those games. We've drawn far too many of them. And that was ultimately what did it in for us at the back end of last year. We drew four games over the Easter period and that halted our playoff push towards the end. We'd have been better off sort of winning a couple, losing a couple in terms of points accumulation. But I think overall it's a mixture of everything in terms of where we've been this season. It's been nice to have a good pre-season with the lads. We had a really good 6 weeks here. It gave a chance for all the new signings to bed in. So we've taken 14 new signings on board. I think 11 of them were with us on the first day of pre-season, which really, really helped. We got a lot of business done really early on, which was down to the sort of structure that we've got here at Portsmouth. So we've got a head of recruitment, we've got a sporting director who take care of all of those things. I am involved in recruitment quite extensively, but it just takes a lot of the hassle away from me. So there's a lot I can sort of get on with on the coaching side. But the players have come back in really good nick. We've had no problems with players coming back overweight. Or unfit. Those days are completely gone. And they just hit the ground running, really, and taken on board everything. And I think they've been really sort of respondent to everything that we've tried to do here. And thankfully, it's been a half-decent start to the season. Obviously, plenty to go still, but we're pretty pleased with where we are at the moment.
Yeah, I think everything's working really, really well, John. Obviously, strong into last season, unbeaten start to this. Whatever you're doing, it's working, isn't it? I'm fascinated to know about your managerial style. Obviously, you had a long playing career. Played under a lot of different managers, lots of different personalities. Which one is closest to you in terms of management style, do you think?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think without sort of copping out too much, I'd look at all of those managers. I think I'd had 18 over my time as a player and say that I'm a mixture of a lot of them. Probably one of the biggest influences, particularly towards the back end, was Carl Robinson, because of the amount of freedom that he gave me as a coach, and also the sort of differing approach that he brought to the game, coming in as a young manager at Oxford with a very, very different style to what I'd been used to. I think I first started playing back in the early 2000s, and there were no analytics, there were no videos. You do really well to get hold of an actual old school video that you had to rewind, and then DVDs came into the game. I know I sound a bit old here, and Sam's obviously nodding his head, but it was very different back then. So I think in terms of the modern approach to certainly tactically, I think that's where I took a lot of my influence from. And then there's been quite a few sort of managers through my career who I've just taken bits and bobs from, some good, some bad, and sort of tried to mix them all into one. The biggest thing for me transitioning from being a player last season into being a head coach this season is that I try and put everything that I say and everything that I do, I then sort of flip over and go, well, what would I do if I was a player? How would I respond to that if I was a player? Would I like to be sat in this meeting? Would I like to be spoken to like that? Would I like this training session? And just that's been probably the most useful thing about switching over literally overnight is that I was sat as a player in the change room last year with these lads. I know what gets moaned about. I know what the players like. I know what the players don't like. I suppose you lose a bit of that the longer you are in the coaching game. But that's, I think, been one of my biggest advantages coming into this job is that I still try and really stay connected to, what really drives and motivates players.
But following on from that question, really, John, obviously I know John Harley, your assistant, and you've got Zesh Rabin as well. So all three of you, I know those two have got 10 years or so coaching experience, but are you searching out some of those experienced managers, the old managers that you had, for a bit of insight, a bit of advice? Is that still important for a young manager?
Yeah, I think it's really important. There's a few people that I personally speak to about sort of you know, advice in the game, and I've got a couple of people that I lean on really closely. I mean, one of my first ever manager, Martin Allen, he reached out to me over the summer and we met up and spoke about a couple of things. You know, we're lucky enough to have a couple of connections amongst the, you know, through the game. Rich Hughes put me in touch with Rob Edwards, and he had me down at Luton's training ground last year. And you always learn a huge amount. I speak to John Ward, who's got extensive experience at this level. And then all of my previous managers, I do pick up the phone, spoke to Nigel Clough at a couple of games. You know, Carl Robinson is, again, he's been a big influence there. But I always speak to him. And they are really useful sounding boards because they've seen it, they've been through everything. And I think it's a difficult thing to grasp unless you're in it. And that's where that experience can really help, because they do understand that the pressures that you're under, they do understand the dynamics of what's actually going on when you are a head coach or a manager. So yeah, definitely something that we've really looked to sort of exploit and lean on. And there's so many people that are willing to help. It's absolutely brilliant.
You've signed Tino Andrin on loan from Chelsea. Sam and I have seen lots of him in their academy. What attracted you to him, and how big a part did the aforementioned John Harley play in getting that deal over the line? Because obviously he knows him from his time at the Chelsea academy too.
Yeah, I think John probably was about 90% of that deal getting done. And I think there's a lot that obviously Tino knows about John, but also Chelsea know about John, which meant that they were really comfortable letting us have him and take him on for this sort of period, because I think Tino had a huge amount of promise early on in his career. He made his debut for Chelsea. You know, really, really exciting young player, probably the best player in the country at his age, all the age groups coming through. And then, yeah, it hasn't really kicked on over the last couple of years. He's had a couple of half that hasn't really managed to sustain anything. So for the player, with the amount of talent that Tino's got, we know that he can really, really affect this level. We feel, you know, very, very lucky to have him here. We've got to make sure he's fit. We've got to make sure he stays healthy, so that we can actually see some of that on the pitch. But a lot of that is down to John's influence and how comfortable he feels coming here, and the fact we are going to take care of him. We're not going to flog him. We're going to make sure that hopefully at the back end of the year we send a player back that's ready to sort of play in Chelsea's first team, because that's the level of ability that the young lad's got. It's just going to be a bit of a slow process, I think, at first, and to make sure by the end of the season he's ready to go. If not Saturday, Tuesday, at least Saturday. But the demands of this league are very, very different from I think other leagues.
Yeah, defensively, you've been super strong in the first few weeks of the season. Couple of high scoring matches, but I think in four of the six so far, you've scored one or less. Do you think you got enough goals in the side outside of Colby Bishop? Because Colby, I mean, me and Sam are big fans of Colby Bishop. We think he might just be the best centre forward in the division this season. Are you happy with what you got in those forward areas?
Yeah, I mean, just to echo that, you know, we think Colby's been immense, certainly since I saw him first sort of day last year, and what he's done for us. 20 league goals last year, I think 24 goals altogether, and he's got three already this season. And it's not just the goals that Colby brings. He brings a huge amount to his all-round game. So, you know, in terms of what we've got in behind Colby, we've brought in a couple of centre forwards to really supplement that. Christian Sadie, who's actually played much more as a 10 than as a centre forward, and him and Colby have played together. They did last week. And Cassini Yenge, who I think he's got four goals this season with no league starts yet. I think he started one League Cup game. Unfortunately, Cassini's injured at the moment. So there's a lot of hype, quite rightly, around his goal scoring record early on in the season. And yeah, he has been out now for the last three or four weeks. So centre forward, we really looked at sort of helping Colby out and making sure that everything didn't fall on his shoulders. And then to be honest, we've had games where we've been good and free-flowing, and there have been games where we've struggled a bit. So I think Cheltenham at home, Stevenage away, we didn't manage to get on the score sheet. And that, you know, that was something that, not necessarily a concern, but one of those things that we really wanted to build upon, particularly when we talk about those draws at the back end of last season. The draws that were costly were sort of tight games. They weren't two-alls and three-alls. They were nil-nils and one-ones, games where we felt we were on top and we need to score more goals. So we're trying to increase that goal-scoring contribution from the wide areas and from the attacking midfielders as well, which is coming in those higher-scoring games slowly but surely. And then really, we're looking at the rest of the squad as well. Set pieces are massive for us. Regan Paul scored his first goal for us at the weekend. The more we can contribute and the more workload we can take off Colby's shoulders, the better. And I think it is something that we need to definitely improve upon as the season goes forward.
John, only like half a dozen games into the season, there's already been two League One managers that have lost their jobs. How does that make you feel? I suppose you haven't had much negativity towards you since you've come in because the results have been good. But how are you going to deal with that, I suppose? Are you going to block it out and you just have to not listen to the noise?
Really good question. I think it's impossible to block out. And, you know, there's one thing that I do have at this football club. I mentioned Rich Hughes, who's the sporting director. Him and I work incredibly closely together. He was really pivotal in bringing me to the football club. And, you know, to be honest, you know, I don't think unless it was no one else was sort of looking at John Messina as a potential head coach candidate at that point. So, you know, I owe a huge amount to him and work really closely with him. And between Rich and the CEO and the COO and the owners, you know, we are looking at this as a longer term project. Mm. Now, I'm under no illusions that if performances aren't good enough, then that's always an issue for any head coach or manager. I completely understand that. And the truth is, there's a huge amount of pressure, and I do feel the pressure. I quite enjoy it because it means there's something on the job. There's something on every single day, every single interaction. You know, sometimes match days it isn't particularly nice, but I you know, love the job day to day. So it's something that I've learned to sort of cope with because of how much I do enjoy the job. And I think without the pressure, it just wouldn't be quite enjoyable. But yeah, on the flip side, it's just not a pleasant industry. Thankfully, I've been in it for long enough where you know that I don't know how to describe it other than being a really brutal industry to be in, whether you're a player, a coach, or a manager. Probably when you're a head coach and a manager, it's the worst at the top. It's just really tough, Sam. I don't really know how else to say it. It's just one of those things you have to learn to deal with, and you know, hope that everything you're doing is for the best, and whatever happens, happens. But certainly at this football club, I feel like I'm really, really well supported. And if things you know, don't go right, it won't be for lack of having the right structure, and it won't be for lack of effort.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up to that. In terms of dealing with disappointments, I think that's crucial in sport in general, because disappointments are always inevitable, aren't they? How did you deal with them as a player, and how are you dealing with them as a gaffer?
I probably didn't deal with them particularly well as a player. I always felt that the losses and poor performances were the lowest of the low. You feel like the worst player in the world and that things aren't ever going to get better. And actually, when you win games as a player as well, I was very much of the nature where you'd sort of dumb down the enjoyment of it and say, you know, you always got to go to the next game and you've never cracked it. I think as a head coach, one of my jobs is to be internally disappointed, but then to try and pick everybody else up after that. And that's a really important point for me, is that I've got to be positive. The lads are always already feeling down. You know, if we don't win games at home, the atmosphere already tells you what you need to know. So it's my job to pick everyone up. And so even though I am, you know, it really hurts me inside. And it's much worse. It's much worse when you don't win a game being a head coach and a player, I found, because you just feel the responsibility is entirely on you. And we feel that as a staff. But it is then up to us to go and pick all the players up and get on with it. And then just on the flip side of it, the slight difference between being a player and a head coach is that what we tried to do was just enjoy the wins a bit more, and actually not get carried away and never think that we've made it or cracked it, because we definitely know we haven't. And that's something that will always bite you in football. But actually just take a minute to, you know, I think recognise the work that's gone in the week and pre-season and how, you know, difficult it is to win games at this level, and just enjoy it for a minute. I think that's a really important part of what we're trying to achieve this season. Not come in and dumb every sort of win down and go, you know, it's on to the next one. Of course it is. And players these days know that they're on to recovery very straight away. It's a very, very different culture. So we sort of got that already. But it's a hard, hard thing in football to do with a fine line, but we always try and tread it carefully.
John, we appreciate your time very much today. Just one more question before we let you go. We always finish with a super serious, difficult question. Here's yours. My good friend Wikipedia tells me that you played for the magnificently monikered Notre Dame Fighting Irish while you were at college in the US. Firstly, is that true? Secondly, is it the greatest name for a football team ever? And thirdly, what kind of student were you? Were you like a frat boy jock, big man on campus, or a bookworm, you know, bed at 9 o'clock every night having done your studies?
So firstly, it's true. So I went out to the States and played for Notre Dame for a year on a football scholarship and started doing my degree there as well. So that was the first one. Second, in terms of that being one of the greatest nicknames, I mean, I think so. I think it's a brilliant name. That's the nickname for all of the sports teams. And, you know, we would go onto campus and sort of bang in the middle of campus. There's an 80,000-seat stadium that sells out every other week for the American football team. And the culture out there is just completely different in terms of professionalism at university. And then I think, the third question, I was very much a young 18-year-old coming over fresh off the boat with no idea what it was like to go and fraternize in American university. So I'd probably grown up a bit by the end of the first year, but the way that they take their sports over there, they're extremely serious. It's essentially professional without the athletes being paid. Certainly the facilities, the setup, the coaching, it's better than a lot of league clubs would have been at that time. Definitely far and away better than some of the things that I'd experienced in my career. So you don't really have too much scope, unfortunately, to go and enjoy life, particularly because I was only 18 and they are strict over in the States as well with the drinking age. I was a relatively good student, I would say. So I always wanted to get on with my studies. And again, another part of the American system is if you're not doing well academically, they don't let you play. So you've got to stay on top of that. But I really, really enjoyed that time of my life. I only spent a year out there. I was going to finish my degree, but Brentford offered me a contract when I came back for a summer break. And I thought that was probably the right thing to do at that time. A really, really, you know, good experience and one that I look back with fond memories.
Yeah, what a cool thing to do. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Good luck at Derby on Saturday, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers. Pleasure. Thanks very much, guys.
Really grateful to John for giving us his time. Next today, we're going to preview some of the weekend's games. And let's kick off with a match which provided a Friday night fright for Southampton back in 2019. Sorry, Saints fans, I'm sure you've heard enough of that 9-0. Maybe it'll go the other way on Friday night. Not to make it all about saintly gubbings, Adrian, but Martin's men have had a long time to stew on that 5-0 thumping at Sunderland. Other than that, though, they've been decent.
Have they? I mean, they shipped 4 goals at home to Norwich as well, didn't they?
This is true.
They've got the worst defensive record in the Championship.
All right. Other than that, they've had loads of the ball.
No, they look good. They look good going forward, in possession, very comfortable. But that's a massive red flag, isn't it? 4 goals at home to Norwich, 5 goals away to Sunderland. Their structure when they lose the ball is not good because they're very interchangeable. It's a really fluid team when they have it. Russell Martin is a coach, I think, that concentrates heavily on what they do with the ball, and which is largely impressive. But because players are taking up unusual positions, because there's a lot of rotation among players, when it breaks down, they can leave themselves open. And it has been a theme, let's be honest, of Russell Martin's sides since he became a head coach at MK and at Swansea as well. So, yeah, no clean sheets yet. Does anyone out there really think that they're likely to get one against this Leicester side? Probably not. So they're going to have to play very well, aren't they, Southampton, to get anything out of the game, I think. Yeah, at least they've sort of kept Shea Adams. Adam Armstrong still there. It's got a very good squad. Taylor Harwood-Bellis, I'd imagine, will come into that defence. He should make a massive difference for them. He's a class player. So, I would fancy Leicester here, given what they've done in the window, given their start. They haven't really even got going yet. Haven't played anywhere near their potential. Again, for them, kept Ndidi, kept Patson Daka somehow, kept Wout Faas, kept Iheanacho. I mean, if they don't win the title, Leicester City, I think there's probably something wrong this season, because their squad is the best by far.
And then like Southampton, Sam, they've had a couple of weeks to stew on a defeat, but that loss against Hull at the King Power before the break, that smacked of one of those days kind of things, didn't it? They had 21 shots at goal, albeit only one of them was on target.
It did, but Maresca has been talking about them being more clinical, being more savvy when they get into the final third, when they're having all these entries and getting into good positions. And that's a big part of it. I could quite easily be talking about Southampton here. You know, they don't create. I think Clarkey said it after that Plymouth victory late on, or maybe the opening day, they don't create enough good chances on goal for all the possession. There's not that cutting edge, maybe that intricate last little bit of play that maybe the rest of it deserves. So I think this is so hard to predict because we don't know what either team's going to look like, because we've just had the window. Both managers have been changing, wholesale changes at times. Obviously, if we're talking about Leicester's attack, the wide players, that's really interesting. They've got obviously two new signings, a lad from Galatasaray, a lad from Sporting Lisbon, high pedigree players to complement Mavadidi's start to the season and McAteer. Great options there. The number eight positions, obviously kept in Didi. Dewsbury Hall's levels have really dropped after that opening day where he basically won the 3 points for them. McAteer could play in there as well. Cassaday. You just don't know what the teams are going to look like. Connor Cody potentially back in training as well. And I think Southampton, Clarkie touched on it there. I think this has been an unbelievable window. To lose James Ward-Prowse only? Well, to bring in Ross Stewart, to bring in Flynn Downes, to bring in Holgate, to bring in Harwood Bellis, and keep the likes of Kyle Walker-Peters and the strikers, I think he would have absolutely snapped your hand off for that Russell Martin a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I'd probably say Leicester maybe slightly stronger still, as Clarkie suggested, but Southampton have had a really good window, I think. And we'll know a lot more about them after the next month or so. This is, it's going to be fascinating. It's probably going to come down to the final third. Who's more clinical on the day? Who takes the game by the scruff of the neck? Which of these players that I've just spoken about are on song? Because I think defensively still, loads of work to do at Southampton, and I don't think Leicester would be defending particularly convincingly either. So, yeah, it should be a fascinating game. And I completely forgot about the 9-0 as well. So thank you for that, Matt, because I'm covering the game. And if I hadn't gone out armed with that, I'd have looked pretty stupid.
Going back to Leicester, Sam, quickly. Has Enzo Maresca boxed himself into a bit of a corner here? Because he's got a massive squad full of players that are earning big money that think they should be in the team. Yet he's also brought in a number of young, exciting players that have freshened up the squad massively. I don't know how he's going to keep all of them content, to be honest. I think for a rookie manager, I know he's managed before, but for someone that's taken over the hot seat for the first time in a long time, he's maybe made life difficult for himself because he's got too many players, hasn't he? A little bit like Chelsea last year.
I'd have been worried about Jamie Vardy 5 years ago if he's not going to be getting a game, but maybe...
Yeah, I'm not worried about Vardy. I'm thinking about some of the other guys in that squad.
Maybe he's mellowed a bit. Yeah, but it'd be interesting, the dynamic, for example, if Cannon gets an opportunity maybe off the bench here or even starts and hits the ground running. So, yeah, it can be problematic. It's a test of his man management, test of the professionalism of the players as well, but... Yeah, they haven't been perfect, have they? They've racked up a few points, but I think the performance levels, and especially in the final third, that's where they need to improve. But yeah, it's a really difficult game to call. If I was, you know, going to hedge my bets, I'd probably go for a score draw, probably.
Well, Quinn bets say it's 11-8 for the win for Southampton. The draw's 13-5 and Leicester are 7-4. Saints won both games between the sides last season when they were in the Premier League. Also in the Championship, Bluebirds and Swans. In another world, they could be the best of friends, but not in this one. South Wales derby time on Saturday. Cardiff host Swansea. Given the problems there have been around this fixture in recent years, I'm pretty staggered to learn they're going to kick off at 7:45 on Saturday night, but my days advising South Wales police on policy are long behind me. I feel, Clarkie, as a supporter of a team who fit into this bracket for a very long time, that I can say this. This is the season for both of these teams, right? Because I know Swans are in the relegation zone at the moment, but they look like mid-table fodder. Cardiff battling not to get relegated. You take points on Derby Day, and that's about all you've got to shout about sometimes for clubs like Cardiff and Swansea.
I'm hearing you. Yeah, I am. Because, yeah, I would expect both of them to be somewhere in the pack come the end of the season. So, yeah, the most, this has potential to be one of the most memorable moments of the season for either set of supporters. I mean, if the game kicks off at 7:45, though, I'm not too sure how many will be remembering it. You know, you can imagine that there'll be plenty of alcohol consumed ahead of this one. That is asking for trouble, isn't it? I'm staggered.
It used to be like 11 o'clock in the morning. We're going to bust the away supporters in. You can't get into any pubs. There's no alcohol served in the ground. I'm taking this from the BBC website, so I'm assuming that it's accurate. But yeah, it seems bonkers to me.
It does, yeah. And I'll tell you what, Swansea need a win, don't they? I know that they're the away side here, but it's obviously not gone great for them until this point. They're sort of caught between two stools at the moment, I think, tactically. Obviously, they were playing the total football a few months ago, but Michael Duff is much more about sort of playing through the thirds quicker, isn't he? He wants to go from back to front in a hurry and to catch teams off guard on transitions with pressing, etc. So it's a real sea change for the players, and it's a process of adaptation, really, at the moment. He's brought in a few, didn't they, on deadline day. Swansea City, so he can reinforce his team. Bashir Humphreys, you two will know more about that boy than me. What's he like?
He's decent, isn't he, Sam? He did well on tour, certainly, for Chelsea, and he's had some minutes already this season. I think he kind of kicked on a bit from where we saw him in the Chelsea Academy in the last year or so.
Yeah, he's done well. He got chucked in at Manchester City last season, and I was like pretty worried about it. And he had loads of time on the ball, in fairness, but he was really nice in possession and played the other day as well, didn't he, Matt? Again, in a couple of different positions, played at centre half and at right back. Yeah, he's defended well when being called upon and looks nice and tidy on the ball. So he would fit very nicely into an old Swansea team. So if they're going to maintain a little bit of that DNA, then he should be fine. They bought three left backs essentially in on deadline day as well. Well, three players that can play at left back. And I don't know about you, Clarkie, but it looks to me like their problem is probably creativity. I know Jamal Lowe's come back, but I think Yates is a good goal scorer. He's a good finisher. He works really hard, but I think that's where they're going to fall down at the moment. So in contrast, I think Cardiff's strength right now is probably in the front positions. I see them having a bit more goal threat, and they need a win, don't they? Because Swansea have won the last four. I believe Cardiff last win at home, well, they won during COVID, but they haven't won at home since 2013 in front of their own punters. So they'll be desperate for it. I'll go a little bit further maybe than what you two have said. I think given what's happened in League One already with a couple of managers getting sacked, I think the loser of this game immediately is under pressure. Really? I think. Yeah, I do. I mean, Cardiff have been in some really commanding positions, haven't they, and not been able to get over the line. They should have had six more points. If the games had finished at half time, they would have had six more points and would be sitting, I think, joint seventh in the table. So they've been capitulating late in games. I think they've conceded the most in the last 15 minutes, and second half record has been dreadful so far. So I think they need a win, especially when it's the derby. It heaps further pressure, I think, on a manager. And Swansea obviously haven't won yet. So the jury inevitably is still out on the new manager there. So not saying anyone needs to be looking for a new gig, but I know how the business works. And I think there'd be pressure on either manager if they're defeated. It's a kind of must not lose, I would say.
Yeah, I think Cardiff are doing all right. I know what you're saying. They have capitulated too often. Obviously, they'll be devastated that they were 2-0 up at Ipswich and somehow lost that game 3-2. Long time to dwell on that for them as well. But they have scored in every game. I was looking at their expected goals in open play. It's the third best in the division. When were Cardiff creating that many chances? I mean, they've been a boring team to watch, haven't they, for quite a long time, a little bit stodgy. So at least Bulut has extracted a little bit more adventure out of them. I worry about the goalie. I shouldn't say this really, but they've got Alex Runason in goal.
This is the Icelandic from Arsenal, who's honestly a bit of a stinker whenever he's played for the Gunners.
Honestly, for anyone that hasn't seen him play, I mean, he was really bad, like in defensively bad. Looked like an outfield player has been put in goal when he played for Arsenal. He was shocking, and I would imagine that he's fifth, sixth, seventh. Mikel Arteta would never consider using him ever again. He'd rather probably play a teenager than use Runason if push come to shove. So I was surprised that Cardiff City went for him, and I was surprised that he went into the team for the game against Cardiff. I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he is much better than what I've seen of him so far. But yeah, I would worry about him in the you know, in a pressure cooker environment like this, yeah, it wouldn't be the safest pair of hands I've ever seen anyway.
Kept a clean sheet against Bosnia on Monday night. I'm just looking at his record, 23 caps for Iceland. This is the start of the comeback. I quite like the rest of the loan signings Cardiff have made. Josh Bowler's a good championship player, isn't he? Sam and I have seen Ike Ogbo. He's all right. Carlin Grant, he gets a few goals in the championship. Sam, you love to make wild guesses at historical outcomes. How many of the last 14 meetings between these teams have ended in a draw?
None of the last four. So that's 10 to play with. Draws, 10. I can see, like, normally, especially away teams celebrating in front of hordes of away support. I'm going to say, you've asked me for a reason, I'm going to say 2.
Yeah, I think there's like none, 1 or 2. It's not many.
You've got to be more specific than that, Clarkie.
None.
All right, it's 1. So you're both wrong.
Half a point each.
Yeah.
If you we'll think take it's that, gonna... Sam. We'll shake on it. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you think it's going to be 2 in 15, it's 12 to 5 for the draw with Quinbet for that one. Meanwhile, in League One, I'm quite old. So if you say Reading against Bolton to me, I see in my mind's eye the 1995 playoff final. If you've never seen that, listener, go and get on YouTube when we're done. It was an absolutely ludicrous game. Back in 2023, they're both in League One these days. Bolton second, Reading 16th. Reading lost their first two, won the next two, lost the subsequent two in the league. Adrian, you still not sold on Sellers?
Oh, I don't dislike Sellers. I just think that, yeah, yeah, he pushed himself into that Southampton hot seat a little bit too eagerly for my liking. But he's taken on a challenge here, hasn't he? Big time. And I wouldn't say it's been a disaster. They've been in every game, haven't they? They've been very low-scoring games, actually, Reading. Six matches, a total of only 9 goals. So they've been pretty well organised. They're young, like ridiculously young. Talk about trying to find a team, okay? How many games have they had? 6. How many players have they used? 26. 26 players in 6 matches. It's just carnage, isn't it? 12 of those 26 are 21 or under. It's a very, very young, inexperienced group. I'd imagine that's kind of what he wants, because he strikes me as a very hands-on coach. And reading between the lines and the bits I've seen, they look a well-coached team. Maybe too coached. Yeah, maybe they're too rigid. I know a lot of the fans are frustrated because it's this 4-2-2-2. So it's a very narrow, central-heavy setup that he's got. And out wide, I think his fullbacks have struggled to cope a little bit. But yeah, look, he's probably doing an okay job, given that he's got all of these younger players and that it's a brand-new team. I fear, though, having watched Bolton in the EFL Trophy the other day in the flesh, I fear Bolton might turn them over here, though. They're a good team.
Reading loving a signing at the moment. They've signed the former Portugal youth international goalkeeper, Joel Pereira. He used to play for Manchester United, could make his debut here. Sam, as Adrian says, Bolton been good so far. Just the one defeat, that kind of weird 4-0 home humbling by Wigan. They're good away too, only lost once on the road in the league since February. Are you expecting them to be automatic promotion contenders all season long?
I think so, although you've got to put into consideration that they've played the bottom three, I think, already. And yeah, just that one aberration against Wigan at home. So I had a little look trying to find some stuff yesterday. Statistically, in an attacking sense, I mean, they're off the charts at the moment. But you have to put that into consideration, because they're averaging 2 goals a game. Last year, they were down at 1.3. They're averaging 16.5 shots per game. Last season, 11.9. And I'm talking about 6 games in here, but I think they've just absolutely dominated some of those lesser teams in the division. So there's sterner tests to come. I love the midfield at the moment. Thomason, Sheehan and Dempsey. A lot of midfields across the board now, I think, in this country. You're looking for that box-to-box player. You're looking for that creative spark. You've got Dempsey, who'll run all day. You've got Sheehan, who can unlock a defence. And then you've got Thomason, who'll sit in front of the back three as it is and do a lot of the dirty work. So, like that, love Deion Charles. Not sure still who his best partner is. I think that's been a conundrum for Ian Evatt for the best part of the season now. I think there's Budvarsson still to come back. He missed the tail end of last season, who could be the answer, but they kind of went into the market, didn't they? And really went big on strikers last year, and nobody's grabbing that shirt. So that's a bit of an issue. But I mean, this would be a good game because Reading have been pretty good at home. I think they've only conceded the one at home to Peterborough in their first home game of the season. And I think they're looking, you know, pretty resolute defensively. They 100% fell into the Cambridge Mark Bonner trap last time out, where they basically couldn't break down a deep line defence, went probably a little bit too direct. Adrian spoke about the age, the profile of the squad, some real youngsters, probably a little bit of naivety, but we know that many a team are going to come a cropper at the Abbey. So they just have to dust themselves down and have a go. I think playing without a nine, which they did at Cambridge, is a little bit of an issue. So they'll want a bit more of a focal point before this tough game against Bolton, I'm sure.
Just going back to Bolton very quickly, from what I saw of them, I love the way that the two wide centre-backs join in. So they really push into midfield. The wing-backs basically hug the touchline, and the two wide centre-backs, when it's on their side, step forward into midfield. Really, really liked what I saw of that. And Sam talked about that midfield, which is really good. The midfield that played in the trophy was also very good. Paris Magoma on loan from Brentford, Aaron Morley, former Rochdale player, Carlos Mendes Gomez, friend of the show. They were all really, really good against Salford as well. So they've got depth in those positions. And the thing that really impressed me, apart from their football, was as soon as they lose it, bang, they're on you. A little bit like Pep Guardiola's, you know, famous teams. They win it back within the 5 seconds very, very often. I think they're a good team. But Sam's right. We'll learn more when they play stronger opposition.
Different league, but similar to tone with the Southampton and Leicester conversation earlier about the creating of chances. I think, yeah, Bolton are racking up the opportunities at the moment. But when I watched them last season, when there's an opportunity to shoot, invariably Bolton play another little intricate pass into the box or play a little cutback. So they're really clever at that, those midfield players that you mentioned. I think that's a definite tactic of Ian Everett. He wants them to be, you know, intricate, maybe to play that extra pass, maybe of Arsenal of old, you know, that when they used to get criticised a little bit for trying to score the perfect goal. I saw that really in evidence from Bolton last season. So maybe that's something to do with the amount of opportunities they're having, but they're certainly really well coached and pretty unique at this level.
Bolton 23-20 with Quimbet at the time of recording to win this match. I haven't meant this to turn into a quiz, but here's another question for you. These two haven't played since 2019. Which surprised me. Which current Premier League manager was in the Bolton lineup in that game?
2019.
Mm. Play along at home, listener. Give you a clue. It wasn't Pep Guardiola.
Got nothing. Need to get the league up. If I've got any chance, I need to get the league up. Here we go. In the Bolton team, yeah?
Yep.
I've given up.
I don't even know who the Villa manager is. Oh, I do now.
Bolton team. I can tell you he wasn't in the team.
Peckinbottom?
Oh, it's good, but it's not right, as Roy Walker would say. I'm going to put you out of your misery. Gary O'Neill.
Of course he was. Of course he was.
Makes sense now, but yeah, needed the league table in another 3 minutes.
Let's go to League Two, where we're going to talk about the Sam Parkin derby at the County Ground. Free-scoring Swindon taking on current boss Mike Flynn's old club, Walsall. Sam, they're getting value for money for their season tickets at the County Ground this season. 20 goals, the most of any team in the top four divisions of English football. And you can even chuck a 0-0 into that. What have you made of them so far?
Well, they've got more goals than Wrexham, yeah? That is good news. This brings up an old scar, this fixture, because it was probably the last time I went back to the County Ground with a visiting team. And I remember sitting on the bench and practically like begging Chris Hutchins to put me on for about 5 minutes. It was a nothing game end of the season. I think actually Swindon were going for the playoffs. Charlie Austin definitely scored. Nothing game. We were mid-table. I was like, just put me on, please, for 5 minutes just to get the rapturous round of applause. Nothing. Nothing. I remember just getting home to, I went round to my mum's after the game, which I remember just sobbing in the kitchen.
Oh, Sam. I really wish you hadn't picked this game.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It'd be cathartic for me. But yeah, just horrendous. Just wanted to get my send off, you know, because you never have an opportunity to say bye when you leave in the off season. So anyway, cheers, Chris.
Let's get him on as a guest. We can hash it out.
Let's get him on. Can you imagine me just sitting at the back of a dugout, Clarkie? You know, like normally, like, yeah. And I was just like, please just put me on.
Were you doing the old warming up? I'm going out for a drink.
No, I just put it on him. I think I just put it on him and just went. The crowd was singing my name and that, and I was just like, Chris, just stick me on for five, please.
So you weren't sad, you weren't angry, you were just a little bit sort of desperate, pleading.
Man to man, human to human.
But how did he custard pie you? I want to know.
I think like in the zone, and was probably like making tactical alterations and stuff like that. And obviously, I wasn't doing well at the time. Otherwise, I would have been out there. So it would have been a bit of a sympathy one. But he'd still would have liked it to have been forthcoming.
This is anyway, breaking my heart. I've just got this image of you. Please, can I play?
Like, yeah.
Pathetic as my playing career, that's
I didn't want like my name to be sung as I was stretching on the sideline. I wanted to go on there and miscontrol it a few times as I was that season. Anyway, the current Swindon, I think we probably, everyone with an eye on Swindon, the followers and whatever, could have probably predicted this would have been close to the start of the season, not the five goals continuously, but I think they're a bit short defensively. I think that's a given. I think they would have liked to have done probably one or two more bits of business. Well, any business, because they didn't do anything on transfer deadline day, which was a bit of a concern. You've got, you know, quite a few options to choose from defensively. Blake Tracy's obviously been a really good player for Swindon, but is more of a fullback. He's playing left-sided centre-half. I understand Tom Brewitt, who, like John Messino, was playing in America for a while, came through at Liverpool, is doing a pretty good job, but you can see that there's quite wide open spaces at times, and they probably shouldn't have given Sutton United an opportunity to get anything from that game, given the amount of opportunities they had. But I really like the makeup of the team. You whack way on one side, Hutton on the other side, who supplied so many assists last season. And then the midfield, I do worry about a little bit, because you've got two exceptional footballers in Kane, again, from Liverpool, and McEachran, who we know from Chelsea. And then you've got Dan Kemp, who's just as lightweight as those two, behind the brilliant front two of Austin and Young. So, yeah, that spine is pretty youthful, pretty inexperienced, Charlie Austin apart, but really exciting. Some lovely footballers. I mean, Dan Kemp is a beautiful footballer. Lovely strike of a ball, quality, creative spark. So there's loads to like about them. Whether they're going to be able to be tight enough defensively to be the real deal, Michael Flynn's going to have to earn his money. But I think the most important thing was just getting a manager and getting a team to excite the fans, because the last few seasons, yes, they've had relative success getting to the playoffs, but the football wasn't half pedestrian. So I think just to get the fans excited, play on the front foot, he's ticked a lot of boxes so far, and he's a pretty likable guy as well. So yeah, so far so good.
Two of the worst loan deals ever, really, from MK Dons and Bradford City, though.
Do you remember it was Bradford that let Owen Doyle go to Swindon? Yeah. Do you remember? So that was
they've
like
been burnt twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Hughes made his mind up quite early on Jake Young. He signed him. So it's not as if, you know, he's someone that inherited Jake Young at Bradford. He actually signed him, played him a few times. Then from what I gather, effectively wrote him off about a year ago. And he's ostracized him ever since. He said he's not part of the plans. How must he feel? 9 goals, 3 assists. Well played, Jake Young, for proving Sparky wrong. And yeah, I don't know what the story is with MK letting Kemp go, because he looks class act. I mean, you flagged it early doors, Sam. As soon as he joined Swindon, you were like, that's one of the signings at the window. Well, 5 goals, 4 assists. It looks like that, doesn't it?
Well, those 3 years at Swindon, my aim always, when he kicked off the season, was to get 10 by Christmas. And Jake Young's on 9. Already, what are we, the start of September? I mean, that's incredible going. He's got himself, what I think he had a 4, didn't he? Was it 4 he got at Wrexham? So, yeah, I mean, he's looking so confident. And I don't know if you saw the goals, but I enjoyed Charlie, because I've been there. Well, I showed you the goal that I scored against Notts County the other week. Charlie Austin basically falling over on the line, trying to put it in with every part of his body. And then Young just arrived right on cue and smashed it into the roof of the net. And the two of them just fell about laughing, which I thought was, you know, a nice moment, because Charlie, knowing Charlie, will be reeling a little bit that he hasn't notched.
Yeah, he's obviously having a good influence there as well, isn't he? Over 3.5 goals might be the bet in this one. 15-8 with Quinbet at the time of recording.
Can we talk about Walsall? Because my mate's the manager. Just quickly.
Okay, this is what I've got. It took Walsall a bit of time to get going, but they're unbeaten in 4, having won their last 2.
Yeah, and that was a great result at the weekend at Salford, because by all accounts, they were all at sea in the first half. And in his defence, he lost his 2 left-siders, I think late in the day, maybe Friday, Chris Hussey being one. Can't remember the other lad, but so he had to think on his feet. And they were all over the place by all accounts, especially down that left-hand side. So credit to Matt Sadler, changed it second half, went to a back four tactically, seemed to do the business. And Freddie Draper, who I feel should be, what, in an American series of some description? Why am I thinking that?
Because of Don Draper from Mad Men, I think.
Maybe Boardwalk Empire. Yeah, maybe a hybrid of the two. So he's doing really well on loan from Lincoln. Really great feat for the winning goal, actually. It was his assist. His shot got diverted away and someone stuck it in, but really nice nutmeg. Him and Jamil Matt, the favoured front two for that game. Daniel Johnson on the bench, not used. Such a strange kind of existence, Daniel Johnson, because he's like clearly a brilliant finisher and has had some amazing runs, but
managers don't like him.
Managers don't trust him. And it must just be, I don't want to say work ethic because that's probably not fair, but it must be his contribution when he's not scoring. Has to be. So that's something to keep an eye on before this game when, like I said, Swindon are pretty open and Daniel Johnson would be likely to get chances. But really good start from Matt Sadler and, yeah, one of the good guys. So really pleased for him.
All right, we're nearly done for today. Got a tweet of the week, of course. So this one comes from Aaron Lewis. It is essentially a reason for us to talk about that unbelievable goal he scored at Accrington. Aaron says, good 3 points and a clean sheet on the road today. Nice to get my first goal for the club as well, exclamation mark. Up the Stags, blue circle emoji, yellow circle emoji. He loses a couple of points for putting a capital Z on the head of Stags instead of an S. But I like the humility here, Clarkie. Nice to get my first goal for the club. Not nice to score the best goal that I will ever score in my entire career, even if I play until I'm 50 years old.
Exactly. It's one of those goals you don't need to brag about it. You don't. It's one of those goals as well where you don't need to go running off celebrating like a headless chicken. You know you've produced a worldie. You know it's a goal of the season contender. Just let everyone else wax lyrical and just play it down. Yeah, it was a very modest tweet, but what a goal it was. What a goal. Did he mean it, Samuel? What are you saying? I think he's guiding it in the right area. I do. I don't think that's not a clearance, is it? It's not a pass. I think it's got to be an attempt, doesn't it? And
Sam's got a look on his face like he's going to poo-poo what I think.
I'm just thinking, would it have been better? I know, like, if there's a keeper in there and if it's a strike, you want it going right in the side netting. Mm. But I'm just thinking, do I want that steered in the centre of the goal? Would that have been better?
No. The fact that it goes right into the corner, the satisfying noise of ball on boot and then the ripple of the net, but the angle of it being in the corner.
Surely he's trying to steer it in the centre of the goal. So he's got a bit fortunate there, Clarkie. I'm being very harsh. No, it's an amazing goal. Amazing goal. I'm not sure if I'd ever put clean sheet in a tweet. Clarkie, how are you feeling about that?
He's just playing to the gaffer, isn't he?
I'm just trying to bring him down a peg or two.
He's a defender though, isn't he? He is a right back. So,
oh, is he? Right,
so
okay.
I think that's probably the
right. Yeah,
that's where it comes. Me or you? We didn't give a flying, you know what, about clean sheets, did we? Let's be honest. But I think a right back has every right to maybe claim that as well. So.
Unless it's 1-0, I don't think I ever cared about a clean sheet. No, you're right.
Mansfield's last clean sheet on the road, February. So perhaps that's why he's included it. Well,
you say he's a right back, Clarkie. He's placed for Nigel Clough. He could be a keeper and a striker. Do not be surprised, listener, if he's in sticks next week.
So that is at Aaron James Lewis. That's where he is on Twitter. What about us, Adrian?
At EFL Whatther on X/Twitter and on Instagram and TikTok. It's just at What the EFL. If you want to see clips from the show, come and follow us. But also we put out links, you know, links as well to the podcast. And it's great, really, really handy if people do share it among their fan base friends, because loads of you are listening, but there's still plenty more out there that probably don't know what the EFL exists. So a little bit of a leg up from you lot would be really, really appreciated.
It surely would. You can help us out by reviewing us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast to. That'd be great. Just before we go, a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer, you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, that's going to do it for today. Then we're going to be back next week when we'll run down all the big stories of the weekend, see how many managers get sacked, that sort of thing. You know the score by now. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks again to John Messinio for his time and to Adrian and Sam for theirs as well. And we'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.